Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
We are joined again this morning by Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Dr. Stern, good morning. Glad to have you here with us again this morning.
Well, good morning, Ted. Happy 4th of July to you.
Good. Happy 4th of July to you, too. You have to be, as you look at the numbers in the Rappahannock Area Health District, you have to be proud of everyone seems to be, we all seem to be following the rules that we've been taught. Because the numbers in this area have looked really good for the last couple of weeks.
That's true, Ted. In fact, the number of new cases reported is about half of what they were in early June. So over the last month, they've continued to come down. And we're now between 10 to 20 new cases a day. The percent positivity, that is the percent of COVID-19 tests that are positive in relationship to all the tests that are done, is about half of what it was a month ago. And the rate of hospitalization, that is the number of new hospitalizations each day, is about half of what it was a month ago. A nice downward trend. The only glitch I see right now, if you look at the data by locality, you see this high number of deaths in Spotsylvania County, and one must wonder what that's all about. Total hospitalizations in Spotsylvania County have been high. So what's that all about? And they're almost up to where about the same as Stafford in terms of total number of cases. One long-term care facility. That's how serious of an impact this virus can have in this what you might consider the target population, the elderly with the underlying medical conditions. One facility with many positive cases, 60 positive residents. Many of those folks have been hospitalized, and I think we've had 18 deaths in one facility. So it's critical for us to stay vigilant in these regards, regarding the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions. They need to be vigilant, and those who care for them need to be careful and employ very carefully infection control measures to protect that population.
Boy, and you I know from the early on when back in April we were talking about this, and this was one of your fears that this could happen. We saw it early on in the Richmond area, and now unfortunately it has come up to, like you say, to Spotsylvania.
Exactly. So we were pretty aggressive early on. There was a questionnaire that the state issued to all long-term care centers to complete on a voluntary basis and to submit to the state, which was basically a self-assessment of their preparedness for a COVID-19 event in their facility. So it was looking at staff training, N95 masking and fit testing and use of infection control measures, the use of their PPE overall, that is personal protective equipment. And we contacted every one of the long-term care facilities and helped them walk through that instrument to make sure that we have an assessment of where they are, that we offered advice and guidance. We offered fit testing for every one of those facilities for the N95 mask. And have continued to provide advice and guidance. We've been fairly aggressive and very supportive of our facilities. And I can tell you, Mary Washington Hospital also has been having every 2 weeks a conference call with long-term care facility staff. Well, they're primarily their administrators or the director of nursing, just to help folks kind of update one another on what their status is and what infection control measures they're putting into place and supportive advice and guidance. Of course, the hospital's interest is that they be made aware of anything that's going on in those facilities, because guess what? Mm-hmm. When those folks get sick, they'll end up in the hospital. So this was a good move on the hospital's part to provide this guidance and advice and support as well. So I would say the healthcare team in the community broadly, long-term care center leadership, the hospital and the health department have really been trying to work together to control the spread of this disease in that target population that COVID-19 seems to have such a severe impact on.
And boy, Dr. Stern, I guess going forward too, this is you can't let up, especially when we consider that the virus is here, and until there's a vaccine, that word and that message needs to get out not only to these long-term care centers, but also each of us as a good reminder that if we're around people, elderly, underlying conditions, be very careful. Because this disease is still here and it's still active.
Well, very good point, Ted. You know, we've talked about the hope for a vaccine towards the end of this year or early next calendar year. Dr. Fiore has made reference to this in a few of his presentations. We know that there are over 100 companies worldwide that are working on a vaccine. This research is going on. And this isn't politicians, you know, in the laboratory. This is scientists in the laboratory, serious about coming up with a vaccine. Well, and you could imagine that if a company comes up with this vaccine first, they're going to make some money. And that, you know, from a capitalist point of view, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a lot of sharing of this information worldwide, so that they are streamlining and speeding up the development of the vaccine. In the meantime, as you said, we need to be vigilant and still be careful. I'm a little bit concerned that the state has provided now for long-term care centers a three-phase approach to opening up again. It's very detailed guidance about testing and ensuring that there's no residents who are positive in the facility, so and so forth, so that they could start opening up to admitting new patients, opening up to visitations, so and so forth. I think we ought to ride this thing out for the next 6 months and be very careful. That will be my advice to the long-term care leadership. Of course, they've got a business to run. They need to be able to admit patients. That's what they're there for. But we need to be real careful with our infection control measures, trying to prevent the spread of this disease, because it is endemic. It's not going away. And we need to protect this most vulnerable population.
Boy, and we've seen it, and again, in my head, I can hear you talking about when Henrico County and they were dealing with it, saying that it really was going to take vigilance and really just be very diligent in efforts to avoid it, and we have unfortunately seen what can happen right up close.
Right, but you know, we've had three or four other long-term care centers that have had COVID-19 cases amongst their residents, and they've been successful at stopping the spread in their facilities. And I think that one is that they found it early, they recognized it early, and implemented their infection control strategy early with what I've been saying is both integrity and with discipline. You've got to stay on top of this, and all of your staff have to participate you know, here's another thing. How does this virus get into the long-term care centers? Well, it's probably through the staff. You know, they're out in the community, they're out with family, and we know that in those facilities where we've had positive residents, we've also had positive staff. So one of our other guides to the long-term care facilities is that they train their staff carefully on how there's kind of a higher standard for long-term care center staff in regards to their being careful. Because if they get the disease, and let's say it's the asymptomatic form, and they go to work, guess what? They're bringing the virus into the facility. So we really need to have the long-term care center staff live at least the next 6 months with a little bit higher standard of social distancing, staying home, washing their hands, using hand sanitizer, wearing their mask. Well, the mask, of course, protects other people not more so than protecting them. But yep. You understand the point, Ted.
Yep. Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We need to take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll continue along this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern with us again this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. So, Dr. Stern, what's going on in Texas and Florida and in Arizona, among others? Numbers in those states just sky high.
Well, who knows, Ted? I mean, you could read it, listen to the news reports, and I'm not sure that people have really figured this out. Certainly, I don't know. But part of it may be because you know, we have expanded nationwide access to testing. Mm-hmm. So when folks are getting tested more, you will see more disease picked up through that expanded testing. So that may be part of it. you know, just because there's more testing available, all those folks who are otherwise asymptomatic are now being tested. If you remember in March, April, testing was pretty much limited to just those individuals who had symptoms. You couldn't get a test if you were asymptomatic. But as we've learned about this disease, you know, we now know from research that 35 to maybe 50% of this disease is asymptomatic disease. That is, people are infected with the virus. The virus does multiply. That individual is able to transmit the disease to others, but they have no symptoms of disease themselves. Just think of the most mildest form of this disease you can have. And so that may be part of it, is that the asymptomatic folks now are being tested, and so there's this increased number of folks. I think in Texas, it's because it's just that the outbreak has now reached Texas more so, much more rural, much larger state, not as dense populations. You'll notice that it appears to be hitting the major cities more so. And I think Texas is just behind the rest of the country by 2 or 3 months. And they're now experiencing what we've experienced here in Virginia. So rather than a surge of disease, it's just that it's now penetrated into their urban centers and now spreading because they have opened up. That's the other element, is that because all state governments now pretty much opened up, there's this greater opportunity with more contact amongst individuals to transmit the disease from person to person, because that's how this disease is transmitted. Respiratory droplets from the infected person to other people, or through contact surfaces.
One of the things you've continually talked about with us is that because this is a novel virus where we're learning all kinds of things, and one of the things I think a lot of us looked at and thought, well, you know, this summer it's going to go away and we'll be okay this summer. And you've all along said, we don't know what it's going to do. We're learning, and I guess that we continue to learn, and I guess it continues to surprise us on a lot of different fronts as we go along, living around with COVID-19.
Right, Ted. And this is our first experience, I think, in history with a COVID outbreak in the United States. Now, certainly we've had seasons where cold virus, which is coronavirus to a large part, mm-hmm. have seemed to express itself more. We have seen in the world, in other parts of the world, 2010, and then I think a few years later, major coronavirus outbreaks, one called MERS, the other one called SARS. These were very severe outbreaks with as high as 35% disease mortality rates. But they were able to contain those outbreaks fairly well. And that's because those coronaviruses seem to create illness more so in the infected individual. So once the illness was identified, you could easily identify those with disease, isolate them, and do the contact tracing and quarantine those who may have been infected and contain the disease. This coronavirus is not so severe. A lot of asymptomatic disease, easily spread, so it's hard to really contain it because so much of the disease is unidentifiable unless you test. So I think that's what's probably partly what's going on in these other states, is that they're just finding more disease because of the expansion of testing. we're doing okay in Virginia. Virginia, the numbers are still coming down. The percent positivity is coming down. The governor does today, phase three. It starts today, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're in phase three now. Yep.
Yeah, so we're good to go.
With a holiday weekend, I guess it's a good reminder, though, for all of us to continue to live and do the things as we've been doing them, and even though it's a holiday weekend, don't forget right now the way we need to live.
Ted, I encourage folks to enjoy the weekend, to get out and about. But there are, I think, some fundamental principles, knowing that COVID-19 is still endemic. It's still here. We're going to have to live with it for the next 6 months at least before we get a vaccine. So what does that mean? It just means that, you travel to the beach, you go to the lake, you do what you want for the 4th of July. I would avoid crowds still, not staying the 6 foot distance, social distancing. I'd be washing my hands frequently. It's a good idea to wear the mask to protect others in these regards, because you don't know if you've got the disease or not. If you've had the disease and you've had a positive a test before, it's unlikely that you're going to have the disease again. I've heard one report of one person in the U.S. who apparently seems to have had the disease twice. I'm not sure I haven't validated that with their medical team.
Yeah.
That's, again, a news report. One person out of hundreds of thousands who've had the disease nationwide. What we know of these types of viruses is that the body does develop an immune response. That is, it's in our internal defense system recognizes this foreign protein we call a virus, develops a defense system against it, and wards off the disease acutely, and then provides long-term protection against the disease. Now, we don't have enough time yet and research, therefore, to know whether that is absolutely true with COVID-19. But we know that's generally true with coronaviruses, that there is some antibody protection that's long-lasting with these viruses. So those who've had disease, you're not going to get it, probably not going to get it again, not likely to transmit it to others, and should feel much more relaxed in these regards. So travel with family is fine. I wouldn't travel in a car with other folks who otherwise you have not been living with, but a family that's in a household together, that should be simple to you could get in a car and travel together. Don't have to wear your mask in a car. Now, that's kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
but go to the beach, avoid crowds, 6-foot distancing, washing hands, use hand sanitizer, and enjoy the weekend.
The doctor has given his orders, so I like that. Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. When we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit. We got a listener question about a child and in sports, and we'll continue along here and talk about COVID-19 on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is now 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, with us again on this Friday morning. Dr. Stern, interesting, just before the break when we were talking about going on vacations or going around, and you talked about people being family members being in the same car. What about transportation like airplanes, trains, things like that?
Well, that's a good question, Ted. You know, do you know everybody that's on the plane? Everybody that's on the train or plane?
I do not.
You know, if the airplane or the train does not provide for 6-foot distancing, you put yourself at risk. I'd certainly wear a mask if I were going to be on a train or airplane. But I know that some airlines now are cramming them in there, trying to fill every seat. It presents as a risk for transmission of this disease. You don't know where those folks have been and the opportunity then for the COVID-19 virus to transmit. So I'd be careful still with airplane flight and train flights.
Yeah, you'd think of being in a close space for a good amount of time with someone. You're right. You're close, and you don't want to put yourself at risk like that.
Exactly. But if you need to get cross country, what do you do?
What do you do? Right. Yeah. Yeah. you may have no choice. We have talked a lot.
Ted, if you're otherwise healthy, this disease, most people again handle this disease very well. It's those who are elderly and have underlying medical conditions who seem to have the more severe form of this disease. And we know that from our research and the epidemiology of this disease, even now in America. We've got good data from China, from Europe, and now the U.S. We know who those folks are who are higher risk. So those are the folks I would be more concerned about, need to protect themselves. Otherwise, most people handle this disease well.
So if I fly across country, say I'm flying across country to see a parent, say, and that's my only way to do it, so I do it. I need to be aware of that, though, of, maybe not hugging mom and dad just because. You don't want to put them at risk.
Well, right. One of my household rules here is right now, no hugging, touching, or kissing,
Yeah.
when the grandkids come. Unfortunately, we right now try to avoid those opportunities. We also tell them nobody comes in the house who's been sick in the last 2 weeks, and or if they have been in contact with somebody who's been ill in the last 2 weeks. That is with COVID-19 type symptomatology.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want the virus in our house. So that, I think that's a reasonable practice. Avoid folks who've been sick.
Yeah.
give them a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And you're okay.
Got a listener question, Dr. Stern, from a parent who has a child has started to play sports again. Boy, sports are a tough one right now, just because some sports you're not into contact. I think across country, I think of golf, things like that. But other sports, what's your advice, or what have you observed with all of this?
Ted, there's a couple ways to approach this. First of all, I think it's pretty clear that sports such as tennis, golf, cross country, those non-contact sports present less of an opportunity for the virus to spread from person to person. And those sports where folks are in close contact, otherwise known as contact sports, basketball, football, et cetera, there's a greater opportunity for this virus to spread. So I have advised folks to avoid those settings where you present an opportunity for COVID-19 to spread from person to person. However, on the other hand, you might understand that these folks, when we're talking about young folks in sports activities, they're generally healthy, and we'll handle this disease well. We know from the research that most people handle this disease very well. It's, again, the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions who are at highest risk for suffering the more severe form of this disease. I cannot encourage folks to gather in a manner to transmit this disease from person to person. I've advised the president of University of Mary Washington, it presents a risk when you have contact sports, and we're doing that with our K-12 schools as well. We just need to be patient, ride this out for the next 6 months. Come early next year, the hope is to have a vaccine, get everybody vaccinated, and then we'll be good to go. It's just being patient and writing this out for the next 6 months.
We can do that. We can do that for the next 6 months. We've done it this far.
Go.
We can do it another 6 months.
All right.
I'm just trying. When you give me an end date to this, it at least gives us something to look forward to. You mentioned schools. I guess you're continuing to talk to area school districts about as they continue to formulate plans.
Sure. We began this conversation with schools specific to school opening about 6 weeks ago, and we organized an ad hoc committee with the K-12 schools and began meeting and developing plans for opening schools. Of course, our focus from a public health point of view was how do you prepare a school to open and minimize the spread of disease, COVID-19 specifically, and then how do you prepare a school for that incident when a child or faculty becomes symptomatic and or is found to be COVID-19 positive? How do we handle that? And then thirdly, how do we make sure parents understand this element of school opening? Why are schools look so differently? This school year than they have in the past. And I think that's one of the more important elements is that the schools, get this information to parents before schools open. The last thing we want to have happen is a child in a school who is reportedly COVID-19 positive, and then you tell parents what you're going to do. I think they need to know now what you're going to do when that incident happens, because it will happen. We open up this fall. We're going to have COVID. It's here. It's endemic. We're going to have an incident. We just need to be prepared for that. And all the schools have plans now and have reasonable infection control measures in place and a strategy to protect the children in their schools. Again, I've advised schools that, listen, work out options for those children who have underlying chronic medical conditions, those with severe asthma. See if you can figure out a way for them to stay at home and continue their education for the next 6 months at least. Those with underlying cardiac conditions or liver, chronic liver disease or autoimmune disease. Let's keep them at home for the next 6 months. Don't bring them to school. I know that's difficult for schools and for parents. You know, think about the single parent who has a child with an underlying medical condition. How are they supposed to handle this? These are challenging times, but it's important for us to protect those who are most vulnerable from this disease right now.
We talked last week also about vaccinations, and we've been so focused on COVID-19. But for parents and for kids going back to school, don't forget about those regular vaccinations that you need in some cases to be able to go to school. But just overall, that will keep your kids healthy.
Sure, Ted. As we continue the conversation about school, I do want to note that the American Academy of Pediatrics has come out with a statement that supports school opening. They understand the value of kids coming together and having that social interaction. So if people are interested more in this subject, they could get on the American Academy of Pediatrics website and explore this in a deeper manner.
Okay.
You know, this is really stressful for young folks. I have 10 grandkids, and three of them are in public school, and you see the sense of boredom, searching for things to do. we do need to open up our schools again and get the kids back into school and back into focused on learning and. Wish we could promote those physical athletic activities, but again, those contact sports present as another risk to children.
I've heard parents talk about the fact that some of their kids, just by not socializing as much, they've seen depression and those kind of things. So there really are a lot of issues here.
Yeah, I think it's valuable for us to get kids back together. You mentioned vaccinations.
Yeah.
A lot of folks have avoided getting their school entrance required vaccinations just because of COVID-19 and having to stay home and not making those doctor appointments. They need to do that now. Kids who attend public schools and private schools have a certain set of required vaccinations in order to avoid disease outbreaks in schools. We're talking about chickenpox, measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis, so on and so forth. There are a large set of vaccines that are required for school entrance and for school attendance. So we will be holding the health departments working with our school divisions to provide opportunities for parents to get their vaccines. Of course, if you got insurance and ability to pay, certainly get that taken care of through your private provider. We're providing that for those folks who have less resources, or may not be insured and have difficulty getting access to a private provider. We will provide those vaccines over the next few months to try to help to get these kids ready for school.
The Rappahannock area, Dr. Donald Stern with us, the acting director of the Rappahannock Area Health District here this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The health district, you continue to have provide testing. You've provided it in Caroline. You did one the other day in the city. And next week, I know you have a drive-through testing in Stafford.
Right, Ted. We have begun doing community testing. As you mentioned, we did this large event in Caroline County. I'm looking for the numbers, but I can tell you I think it was close to 200. We found no positives in that group.
Hmm.
We did one at the food bank on June the 25th, 134 tests. I don't believe we've got the results back from that. And then on June the 30th at Bragg Hill, we did 297 tests there. I don't have the test results back from those. But I expect that we'll see a few positives. As we know, the disease incidence seems to be down right now. But we are planning a large event in Stafford County next week. I should have the address and all the details, but I don't right now.
It is right behind Stafford Hospital.
That's correct, in the parking lot.
In the parking lot from 9 to 1. And if you go to our Facebook page, you'll see there's a link there that you can register for the event. And you've had a good turnout for all of these events. And as far as the testing goes, it's free testing.
Yes. Well, I don't say free. I say it's at no charge.
Yes.
Ultimately, somebody's
paying for it.
And we thank the Virginia National Guard. Have been wonderful to work with on all of these community testing events. Stafford will be our last community testing event with the Virginia National Guard. They're shifting their focus to ongoing testing for long-term care facilities across the Commonwealth.
Okay.
And so we are having to develop our own community testing team. And we've started conversations with Mary Washington Healthcare in these regards. And I believe before the end of the month, we will have a team that's a combination of Rappahannock Area Health District and Mary Washington Healthcare folks who will be responding to community requests for community testing. And we'll do that ourselves using the state lab for our laboratory support. And so that community testing will be ongoing, continue to be available. We hope to do an event towards the end of the month, maybe next month, in Spotsylvania County and in King George County. We're identifying high-risk groups, groups that may have less access to testing. So we're looking forward to this ongoing service in our community.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. We'll wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Warmer weather. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, as we wrap up. You just told me you got some numbers from the Bragg Hill community testing, and those were pretty good numbers you just gave me. We were just talking off air.
Right. Of the 297 folks tested, only 8 were positive. So those investigations will be done today. Each of those individuals will be contacted. We'll do what we call a case investigation, try to determine who's most at risk, that those folks have been around, contact those individuals, and provide guidance regarding quarantine. So this was, I'm encouraged by the low positivity rate, which suggests that the COVID-19 virus is not penetrating to a high degree our community. And this is a supposedly a high-risk population according to the more recent data, and we're not finding a lot of disease. So that's encouraging.
That is. That matches up the numbers that we've been seeing, and so that is really good news. Before we run out of time here this morning, I want to give you a chance to one of the things we've talked about in a number of weeks, in past weeks, is reviving the community. And it's always a good way to go out and talk about some of these points here.
Well, how much time are you giving me for this?
I'm giving you, you've got about 4.5 minutes today. And last week I gave you 30 seconds, so you've got more time.
So we could really string this out, couldn't we?
We can.
So I've said it at least three or four times this morning. R stands for ride it out. You know, we've got six, 7 more months of this, probably, with the hope for a vaccine coming the end of this calendar year or the beginning of next calendar year. With a vaccine, we would have a major vaccine campaign and be able to protect the community against COVID-19. Until then, we just need to be mindful and ride this thing out. COVID-19 is endemic. That's the second letter in revive. That means that the virus is here. It's here to stay. We're not going to kick it out of town. We're not going to be able to box it in and wrap it up and send it back to China. I'm sorry, but it's just one of those things that we're going to have to learn to live with. But with a vaccine, we can. I'm particularly interested in making sure that those who are most vulnerable, the elderly, and those with underlying medical conditions have access to the vaccine. Certainly those who are in the medical community or first responders will be at the top of the list for access to the vaccine as well. So B is for vaccine. There will be a vaccine. There's, again, over 100 companies worldwide, working on the development of this vaccine. There's a number of those companies that are actually sharing data and information on the scientific information to develop a vaccine that we expect to be an effective vaccine. Now, I know people are saying, well, what's in the vaccine? How do you know what's in the vaccine? I'm not going to get a vaccine. No, Ted, it's just remarkable to me that here we take a scientific approach to making sure that people are protected. And some people would just as soon have the natural disease. Well, I don't want the natural disease.
No.
I'd much rather get the vaccine. This is being the process is being pushed through. There's very aggressively. We will not have the very broad population studies of this vaccine as in the past. But the human studies have already started on this vaccine by some companies in some countries. I think China, I understand, in Canada, they're now starting some human studies. So by the time it's made available to the U.S. population, there should be a pretty good assurance that this is both a safe and effective vaccine. So vaccine. I is for immunization. So we're going to immunize the community, particularly those who are at highest risk, and have a major vaccine campaign. I mean, this will be a vaccine campaign like we've never seen before. People may remember H1N1.
Yep.
And our encouragement for folks to get that flu vaccine. Well, this will be a vaccine campaign like you've never seen. And then E is for everyone has an opportunity to participate in the continuation of protecting our community, certainly those who are elderly and those with underlying medical disease. Wear your mask, wash your hands, continue practicing social distancing.
Dr. Donald Stern, Acting Director, Rappahannock Erie Health District. Dr. Stern, thank you. Talk again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ted. Have a great 4th of July.
You too.
The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.